Hey everybody, Ben Bailey here. Time for yet another episode of Tall But True.
Yet another episode.
This is eight. This is episode number eight of Tall But True, where the tales might sound tall, but they are in fact true.
And they are, yes, they're true. I'm DC Benny. I'm co-hosting with the Big Ben Bailey.
What's up, everybody?
Tall
Big,
But True.
Big Ben Bailey.
And who do we got today? We got a...
Today our topic is holidays.
Holidays.
Holiday stories. Anything about holidays.
Appropriate, yeah.
Which is pretty broad, which is good.
It's good.
There's a lot of different holidays. I'm going to be doing Cake Day.
Cake Day.
No, I'm just kidding. today our topic, our theme is holidays. This is Tall But True, where we tell stories based on a theme, comedians, actors, funny people, anybody who has a good story, really, down to my next-door neighbor, Bryce. He was a guest on a previous episode. I think he did a great job.
Yeah, he jumped in here. That was great.
Yeah.
So who we got today?
Today we have an actor, a great actor, who you might remember as Eddie Lebeck, Carla's boyfriend on Cheers, if you want to go back that far.
Oh, wow.
He's been in a lot of stuff since then. He's been in all sorts of things, and he has a radio show. He sort of turned radio host a few years back, and he does a great job. Mr. Jay Thomas.
Jay Thomas. I've heard that name. I know that face. He's one of those dudes.
Yeah.
Seen him 8 million times.
Yeah, and you'll know his voice, too, for sure. But he's a good dude. I've done his show a few times and invited him to come on because he's known as a storyteller. He went on Letterman like every year for 20 years and told this story about how it's about him and another guy and the Lone Ranger, the guy who played the Lone Ranger.
Oh, Clayton.
Yes.
Something.
Clayton somebody.
Yeah. Oh, I would love to hear that.
He's not going to be telling that story today because our theme is holidays.
Yeah, holidays. But maybe the Lone Ranger will pop up in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think it probably will. I think anytime you talk to Jay and talk about stories, Tonto and the Lone Ranger come up. So that's today's show, guys. We're talking holidays with Mr. Jay Thomas right after this.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Mr. Jay Thomas? This is Ben Bailey and the podcast Tall But True calling.
What's happening?
Hey, how are you, buddy? What are you doing?
Good. Where are you?
We are in our studio.
I got off the air 1 minute ago.
Oh, okay. Good. Good. Do you need a break? Do you want to take a little time?
I know. I thought we were doing it at 6.
Yeah, it is 6. Are we in different time zones?
Oh, you're in New York?
Yeah. Where are you?
You're in New York? I'm ready to do it now, sure.
Are you really?
That didn't sound too convincing.
No, were you expecting us to call you in like three more hours?
In California.
Oh.
No, I thought you were in California the whole time.
Oh,
so
no.
So you never said, no, I'm fine. I'm perfect. I'm ready to go.
Okay, cool.
You know, what?
Sorry,
see,
were you?
I gotta what? Go get prepared to talk?
You can talk, right? Well, I just want to make sure you have.
Sound okay to you guys?
Yeah, sounds good, man. Sounds I can good. Hear you loud and clear. Can you hear us?
Well, yeah, you know. And after I do a play or something, I have to chill out after I do a scene because I find actors who do that shit so fucking stupid. Yeah. I gotta chill out.
I just need a little time.
I take the character home with me. Yeah. I take it home. Home with me sometimes. What fucking assholes. And you know, being a character actor, I've had to watch these fucking leads go through all this fucking bullshit. Give me a fucking break. I sit around hoping they fail. Anyway, I'm ready.
I need a little. I'm sorry, Jay. I'm not ready. I need a moment.
Yeah, Ben's got to. He's got to take a breath and dust his panties. And,
yeah,
I need to sit. I just need to sit and be. I just need to be.
I read with Robert De Niro. I read with Robert De Niro for the Deer Hunter.
No
and
shit.
When I say I was raw, yeah, I read with him two or three times in my life.
Wow.
But when I say raw, I had done this play in New York. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a DJ. I'd been from North Carolina. So I do this heavy play, not a comedy. And I was doing stand-up. And so some woman saw me, this woman named Siska Woman. She's a famous casting director and producer doing a Deer Hunter. And
right.
She said, would you like to come in and read? Yeah. So...
No thanks.
Robert De Niro. And he did all that shit. Yeah. And I said shit to him while he was doing it. Oh, yeah.
Did you really? You were talking trash to De Niro? You were
yes,
like, Mow! Mow! Mow!
No, you know what I did? He went around the corner. He didn't want to read with me first because he just got in from Manila or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah.
And I was just going to read with the woman. And I said, come on. I said, come on. You're here. I'm here. You know, you want to know what I can do? Let's do this, right?
You want to read with Bobby?
And I was playing a guy.
Get Bobby in the room.
Yeah. I stayed back in Vietnam, and I was running the Russian roulette game. That's what my part was. I was a soldier that stayed back.
Right.
So I lied to him and said I did two tours of Vietnam and all that other shit. Did all that. So, and I was wounded three times. You know, people always go, why do you lie like that? To fucking get ahead. That's why.
To get the part. What do you think?
So
acting is believing.
He goes around a corner in this big apartment. Right. Michael Cimino's apartment, the fucking director that also did the terrible cowboy movie that nobody watches.
Silverado?
It ruined his career. No, with no, Chris Christopherson. And,
oh, yeah. What was that thing?
Oh, what was that one?
It's a famous failure.
Heaven's Gate. No, what was it?
Heaven's Gate, right. So he goes around the corner, and now I'm nervous or whatever. And I did. I said, okay, what are you doing? Like what, the actor gets ready stuff? Like that.
Oh, shit.
You went around the corner and said that to De Niro?
No. He went around the corner. And we're sitting in the living room, and I'm waiting to read. I'm standing by the dining room table. And
right.
He's going to come in, and I'm going to do a bunch of, you know, asshole guy stuff, right? So he just kind of goes around the corner, and he stays there, not moving. He's not entering.
Right.
So I say, what are you doing? Some kind of actor getting ready stuff? And no, that didn't help. I read in the paper. I saw when they were leaving. When the cast was leaving,
he just never came out.
When do you want to start this? When do we start this?
We already started,
man. Started, brother.
Oh, this is it. This is how it works.
This is it.
Now, that this story is it, may be a lie because I'm trying to get ahead. I'm just trying.
That's
to get
all right.
Ahead.
I was taking that
you
into consideration.
Tell lies about people that I know you will never come across. You'll never meet Robert De Niro. You'll never be able to check that. And neither will whoever is producing this thing. So,
You don't know that, Jay.
He's taking shots, Bailey. Yeah. He's taking no shots.
Yes, I do.
Have you met my friend DC Benny? That's
him. Hey,
what's up, man?
He's good friends
Bobby,
with Robert De Niro.
Jay Thomas.
He's talking to me. Yeah,
this guy, Jay Thomas, said that you went behind a post or something.
He said you were hiding from him and afraid to read with him.
Fetal position, mumbling.
You were afraid to read with him.
I'm going to tell you another Robert De Niro story. I'm going to tell you another one.
Fantastic. Okay.
So another movie.
We'll make that the theme for today. We'll tell Robert De Niro stories. I don't give a shit.
No, he must have a terrible memory because I'm sure he hated me from that. So they call me for something else, Raging Bull. They call me for Raging Bull. Because
that's
why?
Fantastic.
I was the middleweight champion of the Gulf States. That's why.
Uh-huh.
Now, is that true?
Nope. Not at all. I boxed at the New Orleans Athletic Club and set the record for getting knocked out the most times, and I could no longer fight in the state of Louisiana. So,
you had a record, though. You had a record.
There's a limb. There's a certain number of times you can be knocked out before you can no longer fight in that state.
There was a... I was a bleeder, too. There was a hotel called the San Moritz right by Central Park.
Yeah.
So he says, I want to meet the actors at the San Moritz before we go to the gym or read or whatever.
Right.
And we were just there to try and play some of the boxers. So I go to the San Moritz, and he's sitting in the lobby, and it's Robert De Niro again, but he doesn't seem to recognize me. And another actor comes right when I come in. And so he looks at both of us, and it throws him. So he says, okay, look, I don't know how this happened. Let me let me walk down the street with this guy, he says to me. And he has a bag, you know, a shoulder bag. And we're in the, there's a couch. And he says, would you watch my bag? And I'll be back, you know, to talk to you. I said, sure. So I'm there a few minutes. I have to pee. I got to pee.
Right.
So I take his bag and I go upstairs and I piss. And when I come back down, and I'm not kidding, you know, he's from New York and all that shit.
Yeah.
This motherfucker thought I stole his bag and was, I'm not kidding, and was really acting fucking weird. So I come down the stairs. Now, this is Robert De Niro early in his career. And I go, hey, man. He goes, where were you with my bag? I go, I went to take a leak. He goes, yeah, you went to take a leak? Now, I guess he thought I took his bag and was looking through it.
Rifle through
what,
it, yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
Robert De Niro?
Yeah, yeah.
I had to piss. I kept saying to him, I had to take a leak. And I said, what do you think? I wanted to go through your bag upstairs, right?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't go well.
What did he say? You and your great first,
you
second
notice
impressions.
I'm not in Raging Bull.
What did he?
Yeah.
What did he say to that? He didn't have much
what?
To say. That was the end
down,
of it.
He quieted down, and I know he wanted to look through his bag. I know he did.
I only have one question for
but
you about that story, Jay.
Couldn't do it in front of me. Right.
What was in the bag?
Joe Pesci.
I know you looked in that fucking thing when you were up in the bathroom. I'm just kidding, man. I know.
Badly. You know when you really have to pee badly?
Yeah. It gets to a point where nothing else matters. Yeah.
You're just trying not to
pee
on the bag.
You just have to piss. Yeah. I can't even think of anything except for the fact that I have to piss right now, and that's it.
One hand on the bag, the other on the dick. You're getting the job done, run downstairs, and now you're blamed.
Now you're blamed by De Niro. It's like, your mother's cunt. Doesn't he say that in
Can
Raging Bull?
Imagine?
I hope he
what
does, or I just
have,
said that
you know,
randomly. Yeah, what were you going to do?
Stolen his license. Should have stolen his license.
That would be perfect.
His taxi license?
Yeah.
His Travis Bickle license.
All right, when do we start? How does this work?
We're already in it, man.
We're doing it.
We're just
we're
telling
supposed
stories.
To be talking about holidays.
Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about holidays, but
well,
fuck that. Let's talk about De Niro.
Jay Thomas, they, I'm just thinking, who's that guy talking? And then no one will believe it anyway.
Well, we already did all that. We intro'd you. We told them all about you, and we said he's joining us on the phone here any minute.
Yeah, and that he might be taking shots.
I said you were Eddie Lebeck on Cheers. Is there any other credit? I said,
there's some others.
I said you were Murphy Brown's. You won Emmys for playing, Murphy Brown's boyfriend, right?
For 7 years. And then I had my own show. And every time I get my own show, they would act like my character was leaving to do a talk show. And then they'd always write in there, yeah, but he'll get canceled and he'll be back. And that would really happen.
What was your show?
Funny, right?
What was the Jay Thomas show called?
I did a show. I did one on. I had a bunch of shows. I was on Fox. I was on the WB. The one that ran the longest. I was on ABC. Married People. It was called
Married People. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Middle couple in the thing.
Yeah.
And then the show that ran for a long time was called Love and War. On CBS, and it was produced by the people from Murphy Brown. And Susan Day was the first year, and then she left the show, and then Annie Potts came in year two and three.
I remember.
But we were going against Mad About You with Helen Hunt.
Yeah. And Paul Reiser.
Right.
Paul Reiser.
And they were playing the same thing, you know, and I'm not Jewish, but the Jew with the wasp.
Yeah. In Hollywood, odds. What are the odds? Not that good.
You've done a lot of great stuff, though, in your career, man. You've had a great career.
My show was canceled because the producers, you know, were cheap or whatever, wanted to change things or make it video and not film or whatever. They were just really cheap. And so finally,
right.
Les Moonves,
as producers can be,
didn't like them. He didn't like them. And he canceled the show.
Oh, because of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, the show was like 20th or something. We were doing fine, you know. Yeah, he canceled.
It's such a crapshoot, isn't it?
Well, no, they would do shit to the studio. And they would do cheap shit. And she was a great writer. a husband was cheaper than shit. One night he tried to serve us the food that they'd laid out all day on the set when we had our closing party. He tried that.
You're kidding.
He wouldn't park his car. He wouldn't valet his car because he said, I drove here for free. Why should I pay somebody to park it? That's what he'd say.
Well, so you're a big shot. That's what you're supposed to do. Then you don't have to park the fucking car. You get out right by the door. Whatever. I would pay to valet my car when I had $2 to my name. I'm so the opposite of that guy.
I don't like valet. Valet.
But his reasoning was always he drove it there. He also killed JJ's mother.
I don't know what
you
that means.
JJ is? It's a bar. It's a little bar with like six seats. It's famous. And I believe in the television show Gotham that Billy Bob Thornton is on, he's a customer of Shay J.
Oh, okay.
And one morning, Shay J's mother was crossing the street right by. It's right there. And then big hotels and all. It seats six people. It's a little tiny tiki bar. It'll never close. He must own the thing. The
is this in New York City?
Across the street. No, in Santa Monica.
In Santa Monica,
and they knock her like 50 feet in the air.
Holy shit.
Kill her dead right in the crosswalk. So I don't know if they ran or whatever, but yeah, that wasn't good either.
Yeah, that's
not
good.
No, that doesn't sound too good, especially for the mother.
And they were like, it was almost like, you know, Ted Kennedy, you know, and Kenny Bunk Party, like 47 calls to somebody before he dove in the water. I think that they had called a bunch of people, and it wasn't good. It didn't look good.
Nowadays, we'd have all the cell phone records. We'd know exactly what happened.
Shay J shit out of them. Yeah. Next time you're in L.A., go to Shay J, because you're a big person.
I'm physically a large man. Yeah,
just yes.
You can sit in someone's lap.
The other
on
three
one of those
people
seats.
For the six.
Just the three of us could fit in like there.
Is there a question you'd like to ask?
That I would like to ask you?
Yeah, because I'm not a very good.
Is this your segue into your story?
Yeah, we were going to say something about a holiday, right? What was your holiday story?
Yeah, we were talking about holiday stories. We were talking about
Was it a holiday theme?
Your credits and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I was telling DC that you told that great Lone Ranger story on Letterman. Like, how many years did you do that?
20 years.
Jesus.
20 years.
Was that about
same one.
Clayton? Was it Clayton Powell, the Lone Ranger, the original Lone Ranger? Or Clayton?
What's the guy's name?
You sound like Clayton Moore.
Clayton Moore.
I was close.
We're young men, Jay.
I remember him, though. I remember him.
I just stopped 2 years ago.
Clayton Moore was playing the Lone Ranger until 2014.
I'm calling De Niro, man. He's got some unfinished business with you.
American families gather around their televisions for that story every Christmas, every year.
Dude, my dad is going to be so excited that we had you on and we actually talked to you about that because he loves that.
Yeah.
He loves that story. Yeah, he would listen to you tell it over and over.
Is that true?
He would, yeah. It's absolutely true. I'm just trying to get ahead.
I've had manic depressives tell me that they used it to snap themselves out of depression in June.
They tape it.
I'm not joking.
Wow, no shit.
Only in June.
One night.
Like 6 months later, I think.
My wife says, we've been invited to sit at this table with the head of the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And I knew the guy and whatever. And she says, Roger wants to make sure you sit next to him. Now, it's a big deal to judge it or be able to put a movie in there or whatever, you know? And when I was really stupid, I would do those shorts and all that people think really can happen or they don't happen. So,
I'll be writing all these
short films?
Yeah, they don't happen.
Oh, please, they don't happen.
I've got my whole career staked on a couple of short films that are on my website right now. So,
how many student films ever did anything? You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
So I sit next to him, and I think he's going to invite me to do something with the film festival. And he's like a really shy guy. And so finally, after a while, he turns to me and he says, I'm a manic depressive. That's what he says to me. And I go, oh, wow. And I wanted to tell you that I have recorded when you tell the Lone Ranger story with David Letterman. And he said that to me. And sometimes it'll be like in June or whenever, and I run it, and it snaps me out of my depression.
That's amazing.
And I said, "What, you don't want me to judge? You don't want me to judge the film festival?" You know,
that's great.
That's what he told me.
Are we going to make something together? That's amazing, man.
That's what he said.
Obviously, so people love it. If you tell the same one over and over like that, everybody keeps listening.
Better than lithium.
It's an amazing.
Better than lithium. I hated telling that story every year.
Did you get tired of it? Did you feel like you're doing the same material over for a crowd, not realizing?
I felt like a guy, you know, an organ grinder with a monkey, you know.
And I'm Dance monkey!
Jumping around.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a fun feeling
and
for
guess
us.
Guess what else?
When it's so real
waiting
like that?
Waiting for it to fail. Waiting for it not to work. As you know, as a comic yourself, waiting for it, you know, we don't have confidence. We're not confident people. So every year I'd say, let me do something else. No.
No, same thing.
You know, Will Tonto,
and he would always do
off.
This too. He would introduce me, and he would say, "Is there a funnier man in America than Jay Thomas?"
Oh, the pressure's
and
on.
And would be made. No, no. Of course, the people were going. They would go. No, he's not the. They would think of a million other people.
Wow. Like, and yes, there is. Here's our list.
Two people clapping. And I said to him, "You've got to stop saying that." You know, on the air, I said, "You've got to stop saying it." And he says, "Well, I think it's true." I said, "Well, apparently nobody else does." So it was embarrassing. Yeah.
I love that about you,
and
man. You tell people
miserable.
What you think on
he
the
was
spot.
Miserable also. He
Letterman was?
David Letterman. Oh, my God. Always miserable.
Yeah. I had heard, different
you
things.
"You want this job? You want this job?" He would say. I hate it.
I hate it.
Okay, when do we start this?
Well, now he's driving an Uber, so.
When do we start recording, Bailey?
Sometime soon. We're going to do another 40 minutes, and then
really
we're going
to
start recording. Well, we talked about what our topic might be, and we came up with holidays. You said something about a dachshund attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Christmas Eve dachshund attack.
Yeah, my dad was in the oil business, and there was a lot of entertaining and stuff, and so on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve or whatever, but this year it was Christmas Eve, he would have like a big open house at our home.
Right.
And, you know, fabulous food and booze and everything else. And usually I was relegated to going to someone's house or leaving or whatever. My brother, who was a senior in high school, my dad says, "You can have a date and come to the party tonight." And I think he was going to let him drink or whatever. We live in New Orleans, right? So
right.
I get all dressed up, and I got my little bow tie on, and my mother's getting dressed, and my dad's sitting in the living room, and it's early, and the Christmas music is playing, and we have a dachshund named Duke. And Duke is a black dachshund, and a lot of black animals are crazy, and he was one of them. And we never got rid of him or whatever. He bit everybody in the house. He would sleep late, and you couldn't wake him up. I mean, really. You'd go in, and it would be like 8:30,
like
and you'd try to wake him, and he would attack you. And it was nuts. And he was like my dog and everything else. So, but then he would be okay. He'd be all right. So
he'd have periods. He'd
Christmas.
Have moments of clarity.
Yeah.
What?
You got to tell him the Christmas story to snap him out of it.
What? Anyway, so we were sitting. The Christmas music was playing. My mother had decorated the living room. This guy had given us, he had invested in one of my dad's dry holes. And he had shot a tiger in India that had eaten somebody in a village. I swear to God.
Wait
and about a year later, after telling my mother, who was this beautiful Southern woman and flirted with all these guys and gave my dad money. And so he sends this tiger skin and we put it on the floor in our, you know, living room. In our den. And then my mother decorates the room with spears and bongo drums, you know, like conga drums and nets and stuff to go along with the tiger, right? So Duke apparently had fallen in love with the tiger.
Duke
and
the dachshund.
Was next to the tiger,
right?
My brother is gone to get his date, and my mother is in the bedroom getting ready, and the Christmas music's going, and I'm there with my bow tie. And my dad did something. He touched the dog. He did something. Duke, I guess, was trying to protect the title and attacks my father. And my father grabs a spear. My father grabs a spear and says, I'm going to kill that son of a bitch. And he's stabbing, and I'm not joking. He is stabbing at Duke the Dachshund. This is my dog. I'm crying. I'm screaming. I get a net off of the wall. I have to stand on the divan to get the net, and I throw the net over Duke.
Spartacus.
And Duke gets away again. And my father's stabbing at it. My mother runs in when she hears everything. She opens her robe, and all she has on is her bra and her panties, and she throws the robe over Duke, who I tackle. And my brother opens the door and said, this is my family. And it was Christmas Eve. That is a 100% true fucking story.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The hunting of Duke.
Yeah. Your dad's got a spear. Your mom's in her bra and panties. And you guys are in a pile on the floor
and
on top of the dog.
Did Duke ever end up like a Duke head on the wall or something?
Holy shit. The part about the tiger is just crazy. Your father, what was the thing about this?
We still have the tiger skin. I still have it. It's molted and everything, and I still have it because it was such a sick thing to have, and you know, certainly against the law now, but it really had eaten something. Huh. And I still have, it's pretty amazing. And so what happened was, is, you know, people would say, you got to put that dog to sleep or whatever. Well, I went off to college, and the Duke was still alive, and I came back home one weekend, and I heard this noise coming down the hall. His kidneys had gone, and they put a roller skate on his ass, and
so
he rolled,
like,
around the house on a roller skate. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
His kidneys had gone. He became paralyzed. They wouldn't put him to sleep. They'd kill him. And he would chase after you with the roller skate and try and bite you.
Yeah. Charming animal.
I'm not joking.
He's like the Black Knight.
King,
yeah.
King,
just a flesh wound.
King. And he would, he would go after you.
Oh, that's crazy, man.
Duke the Dachshund.
I was trying to think of crazy holiday stories. I thought of one Halloween. When I was in high school, I was dressed up as Freddy Krueger. Yeah. From, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. And I had a good costume. Like, I had a glove, and I made it, and it had actual, you know, not sharp knife blades, but like shiny, real metal blades on it. And I had the sweater, and I had the hat, and I did the makeup, so my face looked all burned. And my older sister was going out with a guy that night who I didn't really like. I knew this dude, and I didn't like him, and we're waiting for him to come over. She's waiting for him to come over. She's getting ready. I'm downstairs. I'm already dressed up as Freddy Krueger.
Are you big like you are now?
I wasn't as big as I am now, but I was 6 foot, so I was pretty tall.
Jesus. Okay.
And
so you're
thin.
Not me. You're not a midget coming out of the basement.
and I'm dressed convincingly like Freddy Krueger. And this dude comes and rings the doorbell, and my sister's still upstairs getting ready. So I slowly go over to the front door and click on the light right as I pull the curtain back and put my face and the glove with the blades right up to the glass with this crazy look on my face. And my mom was into decorating. So on the porch, there's like a couple of pumpkins and there's some couple of like hay bales and a wheelbarrow with some hay in it. I scare this dude so bad that he takes a step back off the porch, hits this little like drain pipe thing that was always there sticking up out of the driveway, trips and falls in the fucking wheelbarrow and rolls down the driveway
it's
in the
like
wheelbarrow.
Duke.
So I thought I might startle the guy. Now I'm like mortally wounded him. He's 50 feet away from the house and laying in the road in a pile of hay and a turned over wheelbarrow. And I just let the curtain close and just went back and sat down in the living room. And I don't know. I still don't know what happened to him. I went out a little while later and got the wheelbarrow and brought it back up.
And the sister never said anything to you?
No, she thought he didn't show up. She got all, I should have told her. I should tell her now.
You mean he fell? He went away?
He left. He was so scared and humiliated that he just left.
Mission accomplished. That's great.
Oh,
I'll never forget his face. You know, you have that moment. You see somebody's reaction. I'm like, oh, that is priceless. I'm going to keep that forever.
Well, when I was growing up, we had my parents. My dad was Jewish and my mother was German Catholic. So she...
That's a
converted.
Combo.
Well, she had, you know.
Why does that group always get together?
I don't. You know, it's yeah. She on his
every
side
time
of family.
You talk to someone, like,
they were already, they were, you know, all slaughtered on his side of the family by Nazis. On my side of the family, there was one relative. I don't remember who it was, but it was like an uncle or something, but like in a German army. And I always be like, is that guy a Nazi? And she's like, nah, you know, he just had to join, or they'd shoot you. That's how it worked. You know, go do your homework. Or you're gonna get
go to your own.
So what? Good guess on a Nazi.
Not a Nazi, a German soldier around that time.
I was just a. That's right. I was just a soldier.
When the holidays
the symbols meant nothing.
When the holidays would come
it's
around,
a good luck Koreans.
We do. We would do a mixture. Like we had a for we had a menorah, and my mom would tie. Like Christmas tree branches to it. So we had this sort of mixture. Every year they tried to perfect it, but it was always fucked up. Like every year, it just never really, it never really worked. And there was one, so one year we're going to do a Hanukkah, and my mom has bought some chair. We got no money. And my mom has bought some chair from this, some Romanian antique dealer and has some like layaway plan. There's this antique chair. We got no fucking money, right? And she's got this chair in the house. And then they invite all their artist friends and just crazy people in the neighborhood. This is in D.C., so there's not a lot of creative, you know, it's like everybody's got the khakis and the penny loafers and everything. But our house, it was all the nutbags came to our house. So she had this gay opera singer with a glass eye who would bring pesto.
Oh
and
God,
he, and he put weed in the pesto. So that was the first guy that came. Oh, and I would make him laugh.
That's a
good
as
a kid, idea. If you make him laugh, the glass eye would pop out. So that was the big that was the big thing, if you could make him laugh. So it was that guy.
There was a opera singer with a glass eye that pops out if he laughs hard enough.
We'd always, they'd get drunk, and I would just start doing like, you know, doing impressions or stuff like that, and he would start laughing, and I was just waiting for that eye to pop out, right? And, you know, so it was him. There was the trash men. She'd invite the trash men. There was this Indian guy who was in the English.
The guys who picked up the garbage?
Yeah.
Your mom invited them to the party.
Them. Yeah, there was a homeless poet who wrote.
You've all been their people. You know
I did say that like they were these unapproachable.
You did.
How do you invite the garbage man?
She invited the trash man.
People are nothing. Just getting garbage man.
The trash man in New York that makes $158,000 a year.
Right. With full benefits.
Thank you. And overtime? Yeah. Taking down about 220? Sure.
I didn't mean to make them sound subhuman. No, I
really?
Just wanted to make it clear
we were the only house on the block that had the trash man coming.
His mom was inviting, you know, people that they didn't even necessarily know to the.
So we got the trash man. We got the trash man. There was a homeless poet that lived
Donald
in a box.
President. Who cares?
Homeless poet that lived in a box.
And
a homeless poet that
lived
in a box.
He wrote his poems on the outside of the box, and he got banned.
That's going too far.
No, not at all. He got banned because he peed in a houseplant. What does it sound like?
Remember scabies?
Scabies.
Yeah. Those are scabies.
Scabies the clown?
No,
that was a clown in the '80s.
No.
Scabies,
he
right?
He jumped in the creek. You know, he would wash himself in
the
creek.
That guy had bugs and shit on him. I would not have let him.
Well, he was in. So
what did he do?
He peed in the
houseplant, so he got disinvited. One year he got disinvited after peeing in a houseplant. So and then there was this Indian guy who was in the Air Force in the English, the RAF, and he had bombed, you know, the Germans in World War II and whatever. And he was very Anglophile. He had the blue blazer. You know, he had a crest of some club he was in it or whatever.
Right.
You know, like the Chowder Society.
Good evening.
No turban. None. No, he was very trying to be, you know, like Gunga Din, you know, but without the turban. So we had this thing.
And
It's not racial at all. It's
he
a
was
movie.
Aspiring. You're acting like a guy in a blazer is aspiring to go down to Gunga Din.
You were asking me to describe him. I'm giving you a visual. You know, I'm giving you a visual.
He's wearing a blazer. The guy's wearing a blazer.
He's wearing a blazer.
Who's Gunga Din?
Never wore a blazer.
Well, you don't know
you
that.
You really don't know who that is?
I know who that is. I know who that is.
Just time for a little laughter.
Gunga Dennis?
I know Gunga Dennis. It's a movie with Cary Grant.
Ben, and Vincent, you know Vincent Gunga Dennis.
You're a better man than I. Anyway, so we got the dinner. We got the dinner. The dinner's going. I'm trying to make the opera singer laugh. They're eating the pesto with the wheat in it.
When does this start? When do we start?
This is a Hanukkah. This is the first night of Hanukkah. And this has been going on and off throughout my whole life. This is in the 70s. I'm like 8 years old. I don't know.
This is a typical Hanukkah Christmas celebration.
They're getting
in the Wartofsky household.
They're getting trashed, okay? The doorbell rings. It's the Romanian art dealer, and he's there to repossess the fucking chair because my mom didn't make a payment on it. So the Indian guy starts swinging on him, right? We got to get them out. He takes the chair, and then it just goes south from there. Everybody leaves. So my mom's in there, my dad's in there. They're both hammered, and they start arguing. And when they start arguing, the Jewish-German thing comes up. So my mom's, right. You know, my mom, my dad's, it's like, you shouldn't have bought the antique. And my mom's like, you're cheap. Your people are cheap, you know. And my dad's like, you know, you that guy was a Nazi in the photo album. And they start arguing.
Jesus,
my dad goes outside to smoke a cigarette, and my mom locks him out, and she's like, they should have burned all you in the oven, right? So my dad,
oh my god,
punches through the glass door. I'm like, Mom, get the fuck out of here. Go upstairs.
Right? I'm not sure I want to be a part of this. I don't think I want to be a part of this anymore.
It's going to be okay, Jay. We're almost there.
Real bad territory.
My dad punches
it's
through
a family
the glass
holiday.
Door.
Tell me you can edit this.
Hey, man.
No way.
She goes upstairs, locks herself in this room, and what she does is she plays this German marching music she has at full blast, right? Like this, you know, it's like
you
beer garden. I'm not kidding, man. This is my childhood, dude. This is my childhood.
Holy shit.
So my dad's banging on the door.
What are you
She's
wasting
playing
it here for? Write down.
Let the man tell his story, Jay. Come on now. It's almost to the end.
Yeah, it's almost to the end, bro. They're you know, back and forth. And then finally my dad goes downstairs. It all gets quiet. And the next day they're chilling out, and everything's fine again, because that was
cease
the pattern.
Ceasefire has been called.
It was all quiet on the Western Front, and we get a phone
November
call.
November 11th at 11:11.
Opera singer, and he's like, "Hey, have you seen the eyeball? It fell out." And I was so hammered, so I went on the eyeball search and I found it outside. And I got $5. So yeah,
you found his fucking eye.
Yeah, so on a Hanukkah, that was the $5 eyeball.
Oh, Jesus, man.
That's a bizarre story, but that's, you know, what are you going to do?
That's crazy, dude. I can't imagine that's your holiday.
Oh, it was crazy. We had some wars. My parents were, man, the cops came to our house all the time. It was like, it was.
Because your parents were fighting?
They were fighting. Yeah, the whole neighborhood would be like, oh, shit, here it goes. It's about to go on.
Wow.
You know? It was crazy, man. It's crazy. But anyway.
Did you ever get into it with them? Like
later on, I had to break up a few of them, and then I was like, you know, Mom, maybe the marching music now.
Maybe that's not the best idea.
Are you still alive?
Yeah. My mom is not.
Are your parents?
His mom passed away.
Yeah,
his
my mom passed
alive.
Away, but my dad is definitely still kicking.
He's married to a nice new German lady. He married another German woman.
He did. Nothing to do with your mother's death, I hope.
No, you know, he took care of her in the last, last years. He wouldn't put her in she had Alzheimer's, and he would put her in a home and all that shit. But, you know, they loved each other, two artists, man.
Two passionate
crazy
people.
Fucking artists, and that's really what it was. You know?
Oh, it's hard. You got two creative and passionate people in a relationship. It's tough, right?
Yeah, man, yeah. But
And a dachshund on a roller skate.
Crazy dachshund.
Hey, what do you want? A Jew and a cat. What do you want? You know what I'm saying? That's oil and water trying to mix right there.
It'll never happen. Mm. It'll never fucking work.
Oh, that's great.
All right, well, listen. I thought it was going to be 6 o'clock California time.
Yeah, I can't.
So I
dude,
really
you're a sport. I'm sorry.
Because this gives me the whole evening. to, I don't know what the hell I had planned, but now, you know, I was going to fart around here till 6, and hopefully this is over.
that's the best way to close the show ever.
Hopefully this is fucking over.
That's great.
How long is this going to go on?
I don't know.
That's great. I appreciate you picking up and staying on here, even though we called you.
I'm surprised the lights aren't getting brighter at your place with the computers being turned off in mass and the electrical surge just heading back, you know. Now, do you edit this?
No, it all stays in.
It's pretty raw, man. Yes.
No, it doesn't.
Even you asking me if we edit, that's going to be right in there.
Yeah, along with Duke, the rollerblade man.
Duke, that's a crazy story.
I would edit this down to 20 minutes.
You would have someone edit it.
Yeah.
Right? Or would you actually do
that's
editing?
True.
Yeah.
You don't have...
I don't have anyone.
Mac Pro and all that stuff.
It's just me. Yeah, no, I'll edit it down. I'll trim some stuff off of it.
Are you good at that stuff, the editing and all that? Are you?
I know how to do it. I've edited my own short films.
Student films, those are great.
I'm hoping to get them into the Santa Monica Festival.
I will say one thing, then this is over.
Finally.
Okay.
I wrote a short film and... Wait a second. I wrote a short film with a buddy of mine. He directed it, and we wrote it together and everything else, and we shot it. And then he was editing it, you know?
Right.
And it just wasn't, it really wasn't, it wasn't working. And I kept going, you know, why isn't it? So he said, look, I think we need to spend like 10 grand or whatever. And he says, you know, he's a real director. He said, I'm not really obviously a great director. I'll hire this guy. He hired this guy who knew nothing about the movie, and put it together in about 5 or 6 hours, exactly like it was supposed to be.
Huh. And wow, that's
that
a good editor.
Magical. I know, that is magical. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it could have been a musical or something.
I've been doing this my whole life, and this is about 5 years ago. And I went, you're kidding. He said, man, an editor can make a good actor's performance great.
Yeah.
And a bad actress performance good enough to keep in the film. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah. You can work magic with what you're cutting out and leaving in. That's really cool.
So we got to edit.
This whole part is going to be edited right out of this. What's the first thing you ever acted in? What's the first acting job you ever had?
It was called Somebody Takes the Park. And it had, I played a reporter
right.
in Central Park. Okay,
is this when the guy was occupied Central Park? We had, like, hostages and stuff?
No Country for Old Men. What's his name? Billy, not Billy Bob. Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, yeah. And I remember that. Nice. I remember that.
Park. Yeah. Somebody Takes the Park or whatever.
Yeah, the park is mine. Is it called The Park is Mine?
Something, yeah.
Something about the
park.
There
was a Canadian crew, and they didn't know anything about New York. And so they had Canadian guys, and they had Canadian grips and a lot of that stuff. And they had the lights. They had the big, giant lights. They had all the food laid out right there on Central Park West. And they had a bunch of actors playing cops. The right. homeless guys would come up and they would say to these Canadians, are those real cops? And the Canadian would go, no. And the homeless guys would eat all of the food. All of it. And the Canadian guys, you know, I'm not kidding you, they're so nice, they wouldn't do anything. Mm. Well, finally, when they realized that some of these guys stole one of those they shot at night, a giant spotlight, they stole it, left with it.
What the hell are they going to do with that? They just run around the corner and sell that off to somebody.
No, here's the sick thing. I was at Craft Services having a bagel and something, and I watched them do it and didn't say a word. I thought it was hysterical. One guy climbed up. They got the big bulb and everything, the big thing. They brought it down, and they had a wagon or something, and he put – I mean, it was a giant thing.
Yeah.
And he took it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Are those real cops or not?
No.
And then they just
dive in and start feasting on craft services.
You know what they probably did? They probably plugged it in to some building somewhere to light an alley or something. Really, they probably did. But it was a major, this Canadian guy went crazy. Where's my light? What happened? I said, you idiots, these homeless guys took it.
Homeless
documentary. And I think he said the same thing.
what the hell are they going to do with a giant spotlight? Why did you stop them?
I said to him,
like I was eating.
But I said, no. I said, I thought they worked for the film. I thought they worked for you. What would homeless guys do with a giant light?
I can't imagine what they would do with it. I did an episode of Law and Order, and they had like 100. It was supposed to be in an abandoned subway tunnel where there was like a homeless city. So there was like 100 extras that were made to look like homeless people, and there was also a few real homeless people who sort of found their way in.
Yeah,
and you could tell because like. It was so funny. They'd be like, all right, we're going to take five. We take a break. And you'd be standing on the platform, and all these very homeless-looking people would come walking out. But then they would, like, reach under their blankets or their rags or whatever and pull out their iPhone and start, you know, start messaging. Like, okay, these guys aren't really homeless. They sure looked like they were. But then there's a couple of people who were, like, just dumping anything they could from craft services into the pockets of their jacket. I'm like, I think we might have a couple of real homeless people in our homeless extras group. And they came and hauled
you
them away.
You asked me about my first real movie was Chud.
Chud. Remember that movie?
No way! You're in Chud?
Cannibalistic human.
Humanoid.
Underground. CH. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say that I knew exactly what it stood for.
John Goodman had just come from St. Louis, and I was really fresh from North Carolina and being a DJ and all that stuff, and an actor. And so he and I think might have been with the same agency. And so we played these two cops, and we were eaten by the monsters.
You got eaten by Chud?
Well, they were zombies. They were living underground, and the toxins would turn them into zombies, turned all the homeless people.
Okay.
Now here's the weird thing. It was way the hell downtown, and nobody, you can watch that movie again, nobody catches a train or a taxi and goes to Midtown or Uptown, and they would have gotten away from the trouble. Nobody leaves the area.
You just stay below Wall Street. If we could go north, we'd be fine. But we'll stay here and get eaten. I'm going to watch
that. They get these flashlights, and they put them over these extras, and they get these flashlights, and then they put sheets, and they make the sheets a color or whatever. It was so hokey that it was a drama, and it was supposed to really be scary.
Yeah.
And then I think about halfway in, the producer said, "This is a comedy." He says, "That's true. This is not.
Oh, that's great.
This is not a drama." Yeah.
I think
they made Chud 2. Yeah.
They did. Yeah, I think they made Chud 2. Yeah.
It couldn't hold up to Chud 1.
Well, my joke on Chud 2 was, you know, Goodman was really huge then. And I said, well, they were still gnawing on him in the sequel.
Chud 2. Finished.
I think we were in the middle. I think in the first version, we were in the middle. We may be last now because it shows that they're still there. Like Goodman and I turn around and you hear, and we're eating.
Right.
You know, they eat everybody in the diner. It's the Corfu Diner over there on 11th Avenue.
I love that they changed it into a comedy.
Yeah.
I auditioned for an HBO show thinking it was a drama. And I went in and I gave this like really, I thought it was like this real earnest, intense performance. And the two casting girls were just dying laughing at the end of it. And they were like, that was great. That was hilarious. I'm like, I thought it was a drama. I didn't get the part. No, it was a comedy. It was bored to death. It was for bored to death.
Oh, wow.
When Ivan Reitman was doing the movie about with Robert Redford was a lawyer, and there was a fire in it, and Deborah Winger was in it, and but I went in to read for a guy that was in the courtroom or something, and
wait, it's Robert Redford.
Legal Eagles.
Legal Eagles, yeah.
Legal Eagles.
Great movie.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, so I go in, and it's a courtroom thing or whatever, and I cry. I do everything through all this stuff.
You brought the tears.
Ivan Reitman does.
You brought up that memory of Duke and brought him the tears. And
no,
so what did
I usually use my dead father, but that's all right. Let's not discuss that right now.
What about the dog?
He said, this is a comedy. He said that. This is a comedy.
Right.
And I said, oh, and he said, you want to do it again or whatever. So later on, I get a call.
This is a comedy,
and they say, we do have something for you. No, we have something for you in Legal Eagles. And they say, just show up. I'm not kidding you. Just show up at 7 in the morning down in the village and at this restaurant. And we have a scene for you with Robert Redford. Ivan thought you were so good. And so I go down and they put me in a waiter's costume, waiter's outfit. So I'm a waiter. And there's about four lines. And I'm sort of sarcastic. And I go up to Robert Redford, and I'm sarcastic, and I say something to the other actor, and it's about a phone call, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a cute little scene, right? And, you know, Redford says to Reitman, you know, I'm in the middle of something with the other guy, and when this guy comes over and does all of that stuff about the phone, he kind of distracts you from what we're doing. Now, Robert Redford's saying this.
About you.
They cut me down to phone call, Mr. Johansson. Yeah.
And that's your, that's what it ended up, that was your line?
Yeah, I'm in it. I'm in the motherfucker. And I get checks and everything. Phone call, Mr. Johansson, or whatever the hell it was. And then, I'm not kidding, extras were asking me for water and stuff.
Mr. P.W. Herman, you have a telephone call at the front desk.
But I'll tell you what I did. I left that set early. Never did that in my life. I took all that shit off and just left. Yeah.
Just walked.
Come down, I got a part for you. I know.
And then they give you, and then it's one line.
Yeah, but you know what? I get paid the same if I'd starred in the thing. That was, you get the same residual check.
I would take one line in Legal Eagles.
Yeah.
I just want to be in a good movie. I want to be in one movie that's a great movie, you know,
yeah.
Or be a part of one. That's all.
I was hired to play Kevin Costner's best friend, in the movie where his wife dies a watery death, not grasshopper, not butterfly. What is it?
Kevin Costner. And his wife dies
Kevin Costner,
a watery death.
Watery death, and it's named like butterfly or mosquito hawk or dragonfly. Dragonfly.
Oh, I don't know that movie.
Right. So I'm hired to play, I'm going to say it again,
Kevin Costner's
his best friend. This is about 10 years ago.
Right.
And my agent says, everybody in town wanted this thing. You got it. And it is fucking great. And here's the part. You're his best friend. His wife dies. She's a missionary doctor or something. He's a doctor. She dies. And he starts having these visions and all this crazy stuff. And you're his best friend. And so you were trying to get him out of his grief. And so you guys are together all the time. So you'd be going to Chicago, you'd be working in L.A., you may be flying down to South America. Well, that's it for me. I'm done now, right? Here we go. I'm done. Haven't done anything big in a while. This is it.
This is best it. Yeah. Friend. You're excited, of course.
Meet Costner. We're having a great time. So in the movie, he's having these flashbacks and water and all of this stuff, right?
Right.
And so they're going, Tom Shadyac directed this movie.
Oh, no.
And after it was over, he gave away all of his possessions and started wandering the earth wearing long robes. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't know that.
No, but that's a great story.
Tom Shadyac gave all of his possessions away and started wandering the earth wearing long robes after Dragonfly. That's a true story.
What does that tell you about Dragonfly? Now,
we're on the set.
He's like, fuck it, I quit.
And Costner's not really doing a lot of emotional stuff or anything, and it's about his wife dying. And he's having these visions and crazy visions and all this stuff. So it's his best friend. We're sitting in a bar. We're talking. We're in the bar. We're doing that and the other. And so I have a line where I say to him, I go, hey, look, man, you know, his wife's been dead about a month. Look, I'm going on a big whitewater rafting trip. Let's go in the whitewater raft. You and me go on the whitewater rafting trip together. We have this big discussion about the whitewater rafting trip.
Right. When his wife drowned.
I'm an idiot. Thank you. I'm an idiot. So I go to Shadyac and I go, hey, you know, we can do a lot of things. But with the watery death, you know, is there something else I can take him to do?
Yeah, why would he suggest that?
Guess what? Came back the next day, and there was a rewrite. And all of that was cut out.
Bowling.
And so we're just sitting there having a beer. And we say, like, four words to each other. And I wasn't taking them anywhere.
Oh, fuck.
Now, we were getting ready to shoot that scene.
Oh, shoot.
Okay. Now, here's
so the they just basically cut that. You're like, yeah, you shouldn't say that. Instead, we'll just cut that part.
He doesn't need to take him. He doesn't need to take him anywhere. So I cut that.
Should have gone like bull riding or city slickers kind of shit.
I thought they would certainly, you weren't going to see us doing it, you know. It was just like I had a plan, you know, I was trying to be a good guy. Instead they just cut it all out, right?
Oh,
so they fly me to Chicago. We go to the funeral. They're burying the wife.
Right.
And we're all burying the wife, and he's not crying or anything, and we're all weeping and everything else. And so my next scene is at this cocktail party, or at this memorial for the wife. And this is true. In the script, I start telling him he ought to start dating. You know, I'm his best pal.
Right.
And I'm going to get a couple of women, and we're going to go have a thing. And so I go over to the director. I go, gee, you know, we just came from the fucking funeral. I mean,
you haven't learned from the first time.
You want you think, and I'm not kidding. You could watch this movie. That's out.
They cut that part out too.
A word, and I eat some fucking hors d'oeuvres. I eat some hors d'oeuvres next to him, and I nod. And he might say, "Oh, this is my best friend."
This is my best friend. He doesn't talk.
Scene, we were supposed to do together, like, and he had been figuring out what it was, and he was going to go find the wife, and we were going to have this big scene together, but he decides he doesn't want to do the scene face-to-face. He's got this new young wife or whatever, so he says, I'm going to call him on the phone, and we'll do it as a phone scene. And so in the
Costner
end of the movie,
that.
When he tells me his whatever, you just hear me go, on the phone. His best friend. I mean, if somebody up there isn't using me as a laugh track, I don't know who is.
Oh, that's kind of brutal, man.
Watery. Yeah. It shouldn't be.
I don't think I should be in this so much. I'm distracted.
I don't think I should be in this film.
So you really ought to
so
read
much.
About Tom Shadyac. He had directed all of the Jim Carrey films.
Yeah, the Basement Tour, the Pet Detective stuff,
his,
or whatever.
His dad started St. Jude's with Danny Thomas. He was, you know, brilliant director. And then after Dragonfly, I don't think the movie did very well. It plays a lot. But he got divorced and gave away all of his possessions.
That's crazy. He's
been on my show. I think he... It's serious for a while. We did, and he gave away all of his possessions and all this stuff. But then, well, he makes millions of dollars in
residuals
and stuff from all the big... So I said, did you give all that away too? And he says, you know, he didn't want to answer. So he didn't.
So, no.
But he can buy some nice robes with that.
He gave away his car and his furniture. Yeah, and he's still getting millions and all that.
So he was just having a bad day. He's like, I'm going to give away all my shit.
He's from D.C. He's from D.C.
Oh, is he a D.C. guy?
Years ago at the Aspen Comedy Festival. He was a nice guy, though. He was a nice guy. Very nice guy.
Did he give you anything?
Nice, but I mean it. He did.
He did not. He that was free.
Robe. I met him once. He gave me his robe.
Fly, yeah.
Gave me some slippers.
You know, who's that guy who speaks in parables? Yeah. Over
hey,
there?
Shediak, what are you giving away over there?
That's right. Hey, Ben, we hear about it, and we show up and go, listen, we heard you're giving all your possessions away.
Do you have like a list of stuff? Because we happen to be taking possessions right now.
Yeah, Ben and I would like to. Yeah, we'd like to have things. And, can we come in and have things?
We're adding to our collections, and you're lightening your load.
Yeah.
Surely there's something that could be worked out here.
I just mentioned him. What would you do if you were Jim Carrey? It doesn't seem to make a movie, a drama or whatever. It just doesn't seem to work out for him like it works out for Will Ferrell and some other people that, you know, do comedies and dramas and all. I mean, it's almost sad, isn't it? I mean, because I think he's a great talent.
He's an amazing talent. Was there one
he's what?
Drama? He's amazing talent. Wasn't there one drama that he did that did all right? Box. I'm trying to remember.
The thing about the mind, you know, something mind.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is pretty. That's actually a really good movie. Yeah, I think he succeeded with that one.
Yeah, but. It didn't do anything. Then he played the guy that was being watched all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah. What was that one called? That one with Ed Harris plays the guy.
Yeah, plays the overlord, right?
Yeah, what's the name of that movie? Yeah. And then there's The Majestic, right?
That did well.
So he did, yeah.
He did Majestic. That didn't do anything.
Maybe Man on the Moon.
The transition just hasn't been as seamless, and it might be down the line. It might be something down the line. You know,
You know what I've always said? There are people that have to star in everything.
Yeah.
In England, they do just the opposite. Some of the biggest stars you'll see like fourth to fifth in a television show or a movie or whatever. It's almost more like a company. You know, all of the actors in England are a company. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them will do it, but you'll just see a big actor who starred in something like Michael, I guess his name is Jaban or whatever, and he has starred as Churchill just recently.
Right, yeah.
And then I saw him in a movie, and he was just playing the judge, you know, like
Like a character role, smaller role, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's like guys doing Law and Orders here. You know, you see they're on a, you know.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
I like the character actor thing. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many...
Jim Carrey showed up in a movie with Matthew McConaughey and a bunch of other people, and in it, he's like a Southern attorney or something, but the fourth lead or whatever.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's very cool.
Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah. They won't do it. Yeah, it'd be fun. You know.
I remember...
Have you ever seen movies with Jay Leno or Jon Stewart... Or Bill Maher in them when they were actors.
I think I've seen one movie with each of those guys in it.
Leno, did the same Japanese movie. Like cop buddy movie.
Yeah, that one where he's like chasing those guys in the mall.
Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty horrific, wasn't it?
And Dennis Miller played a lawyer or something in a movie, and he's murdered in the movie. It's a big.
He played kind of a dick, though. It was like, you know, his persona is a little dick-like.
Yes.
And so he kind of played a dick, so it wasn't that much of a stretch, you know? He was saying sarcastic shit as the lawyer and all.
But it was a big part in the movie when he died. It was like a big thing.
Right.
Now,
you know what I like Jim Carrey in recently? Was the incredible Burt Wonderstone.
Oh, yeah. That was funny.
Oof.
Really?
But you know, with
I thought he was great at it. He's making fun of what's his name?
I asked
Mind Freak.
I did a little part in a movie with Sam Jackson. I did a scene with Sam Jackson.
Was he making fun of Kreskin?
And
I don't think it was Kreskin.
It's Sam Jackson and Julia
Tom
Moore.
Tom Hanks' son did the movie about making fun of Kreskin. I happen to know. But
you know the amazing Kreskin? Or you know? Wow, that's cool. I was talking about the Burt Wonderstone, which is like Steve Carell and Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, magician.
The one about Kreskin, which he got angry at, but it really is about him, and it's a true story about something that he did that was so amazing. Tom Hanks' son plays his assistant.
Colin Hanks,
it is
right.
So fantastic. Who in the hell played him? I can't remember. But the final scene in it is documented as true. And he was going to do this amazing thing, and I will not give it away. And he was waiting for all these people to come, and he does this amazing thing. And, like, the people that are supposed to see it, I'll guess come or whatever. But and then he came on my show during that time and everything else. He did not like the movie. I'm sure he got paid and everything else. But they say that it was written by people that knew him and knew these stories to be about his personality and stuff. You'll love it. Who the hell played it?
Well, you know, with movies, like, I remember I did this movie with Sam Jackson.
Yeah, yeah, right? Scene with Sam Jackson.
And Julianne Moore. And I was a cop in it, a hospital cop or something. This movie, Freedomland. And while we're in between takes, I asked him, I'm like, dude, you're in so many movies. I'm like, how do you, you'll appreciate this, Bailey. I'm like, how do you pick what movie's going to be next? And he's like, he told me he picks his movies based on how good the golf is around there. Because he loves golf so much. So yeah. I was like, dude, that is the best shit ever.
That's great.
It's got nothing to do with the script or whatever. He looks at the script and he's like, how good the golf is. And he did some Scottish golf movie. Like some movie in Scotland that was like a golf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember what it was, but it was this.
Oh, it's hilarious. Like,
why would Samuel Jackson do this?
They
golf
asked
movie?
Michael Caine why he did Jaws 3. They asked him. And he said, oh, we shot it in Aruba.
And it was in 3D.
Aruba.
It was his first 3D feature. Jaws 3D.
How did they get
Aruba.
Sir Michael Caine.
It's a rail in there.
Sir Michael Caine to do Jaws 3. Hey, there was a great writer who was
Money
a friend of Robin Williams. I forget this guy's name, but he was a character actor and a writer, and he had been hired by Spielberg to write Jaws 3. But he was a writer, but he was a comedy writer, too.
Wait, somebody wrote that movie?
He was,
just kidding.
But wait a second. This is they should have done this. He was doing an episode of Mork and Mindy, and he was on the set with us, I guess, like, what, 82 or whatever the hell it was. And so he comes to the set. He's got the script. It was Jaws 3, Humans Nothing. That's the title of the movie. And he handed it to Spielberg, and he says, look, no matter what you make, it's going to be bad. It's going to be, you know, whether you write it or, you know, William Goldman writes it, whatever. This is what you ought to do. You
Jaws
ought to do
Jaws 3, Humans Nothing.
Humans Nothing. And Spielberg threw him out of the office. But and they should have done that. But isn't that funny?
That's hilarious. It would have been Sharknado, like, way earlier.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up with this episode, which is episode number 8.
Thank
we were
you.
Supposed to talk about holidays, but we talked about holidays and a lot of other stuff. It was great having you on, Jay. Thank you so much for doing the show, man.
Well, it's, you know, it's like Paris, you know, this is a movable feast.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
All of our stories are holidays, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know,
yeah,
exactly. Holiday conversation.
Yeah, it's just about the good stories in the conversation, you know, and I think it was great, man.
We didn't hurt anyone's feelings or do too many things. Of course, the Jewish, German...
and the Clayton Powell thing.
That was a little shady. That was.
Well, it's my life, man. It's my life. So, you know,
that was
if anyone could talk about it.
I'm sure it was your life, but that, you know, they should have done something to all of you, the German mother yelling to the German father.
Well, that's what she said. You know, that's what she said.
Touch and go there.
Yeah, you know, I think that dachshund thing was a little offensive. I was a little offended, you know, a helpless dachshund on a fucking roller skate. I mean, come on. You know, that's a little animal cruelty.
Well,
we're going to call PETA about that.
I'm going to leave you with this. Tom Ford announced today, the designer, and now he directs movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if men took a dick, this is exactly his words, up the air, it would make them understand women better. Tom Ford today.
I'll try that when I get home.
Now,
is he speaking from experience?
Yes, he is. But that's what Donald Trump has done for this nation. And he's promoting a movie.
That's the liberal point of view.
In the interview. Go online, and I'm looking at this thing today going, now, most directors don't just blurt that out, you know, in the middle of a, you know, an interview about their new film.
So, yeah,
it's good.
That's
good
new
promotion.
World we live in, right? Yeah. It is great, isn't it? It's unbelievable.
good way to promote it.
Hey, look.
Say whatever the fuck we want now. Yeah. Right?
Hey, it makes you think, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Well, thanks again, Jay. It was great.
Thank y'all very much.
This was great, man. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell people about, Jay? Anything you got coming up?
No, you know, I'm on SiriusXM every day, 4 to 6 Eastern on 94, and then I do the Stern Channel 101 from 2:30 until 5 on Fridays. I still do some acting and stuff, but not like I used. You know, I do Ray Donovan sometimes. I've been on that for a couple of years.
Yeah, I've seen you on there. I love that show.
I just show up and think. But no, I'm not, and then once Letterman retired, people got sick of seeing me every Christmas.
Sort of the Lone Ranger story, maybe.
I'm resting. Yeah.
Retired with Letterman.
I won't ever tell that again.
Well, thanks for sharing the stories you did with us tonight. And good luck to you, man. We'll talk to you soon. Check out Jay's shows on Sirius, guys. All right. Thanks, buddy. All right. That's it for this episode. Turned out to be a long one.
That was a monster.
That was a monster of an episode. I thought you guys were going
to... He was so shy. He didn't have much to say.
Poor Jay Thomas was afraid to open his mouth. What a great episode about holidays. That's it for this episode of Tall But True.
Yeah.
We'll be back with more next week.
Yes, indeed.
So look us up again.
DC Benny, Real DC Benny on Instagram. Good night.
I'm Real Ben Bailey on Twitter. That's probably the best place to find me. I will be at the Jukebox Comedy Club in Columbus, January 27th and 28th. And go to my website, please, therealbenbailey.com. That's where you found this podcast, or where you could find it if you found it in iTunes. I also have a brand new stand-up special on there called Ben Bailey Live and Uncensored. I have two short films. One's called BWAM, which stands for Badly Written Action Man. He's the world's greatest action hero, and his lines are terribly written.
Fine,
he's the world's worst writer. Mr. DC Benny, sitting here with me, plays evil villain. The evil villain in episode one of BWAM. There's also a short film called Meet Me at Ray's about two dummies. Judah Friedlander and I play the dummies trying to meet up at Ray's Pizza for lunch in New York. But there's a lot of Ray's Pizzas.
A lot of Ray's Pizzas.
So hilarity ensues. Also, check out Speaking of Movies, my other podcast here on this same channel. Emma Gleason and I, we watch a movie and then we talk about it. Hence the name Speaking of Movies. You can also get my tour dates. I got a lot of dates around the country coming up in February, March, April. So please check them out. I will be near you sometime soon. Come out and see me. Come and see Mr. DC Benny.
Please come out. Yeah. Jackson Comedy Club of Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Florida, December 15th through 17th. Governors in Long Island, January 27th, 28th. What do we got? San Antonio Improv, February 14th to
18th. Valentine's Day. Special Valentine's Day with DC Benny.
Yeah, and you can go to my website, dcbenny.com. There's all kinds of writing and clips and stuff on there. So
check out some of his writing. It's great. It's great stuff. There's some great stories in there. All right, that's it for Tall But True, episode number 8. Thanks, guys. We'll see you in the next one.